Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
In the South, it's always college football season, and the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Chuck Oliver Show continuing on this Monday. I appreciate y'all coming here to get your college football combo. It's what we do, so thank y'all. Already been a fun show, a lot of good stuff going on. Just talked to Jake Rowe from On3. Of course, that was about the University of Georgia and their spring practice, and they're about a week in, and there are some more stars to emerge there. If we go back earlier, beginning of hour one, it was Drew DeArmond from 97.7 in Huntsville, ESPN Huntsville up there. He and Scott talking ball every morning, Monday through Friday, so thank you for Drew making time to come on. We got Richard Cross, my buddy, from the sidelines. The Ole Miss radio broadcast from the SEC Network, from ESPN sometimes, hoops, baseball, all of that stuff. He even sets up camp in Hoover and does the tournament there sometimes. So Richard Cross is going to join us. That's in about 15. We will discuss the goings-on with Lane and his 85 scholarships. And then bottom of the hour, Matt Baker, Tampa Bay Times, college football reporter for the Tampa Bay Times, which means all of the state of Florida. Mostly Florida and Florida State, we will talk with Matt. So that is coming up, and we'll call talk ACC and SEC with him. So I appreciate that. Credit to an SEC. I'm going to call him a Maka. Maka. Am I close on that, or am I just – I'm southernizing it pretty badly. But he's a mover and shaker. He's a big deal. Credit to an SEC big deal. Who really could have taken the easy way out. Do we know who Ray Tanner is? We should. Ray Tanner is a guy who his entire professional life has been based around sports, and in his entire youth and amateur life before he got into being an adult and getting paychecks, based around sports, but specifically baseball. Ray Tanner is the athletic director at South Carolina right now. His history is Southern kid, grew up in North Carolina, went to NC State, played baseball there, started coaching there as an assistant, became the head coach, goes to South Carolina. For the most part, he just wins. And when I say for the most part, he became the South Carolina head coach in 1997. They never had a losing season. That would be after being the head coach at his alma mater, NC State, from 1988 to 1996, never having a losing season there. So he coached a whole bunch, and he never had a losing season. And he won. He went to three College World Series in 2002, 3, and 4. And I think the number one thing he did in one of those years was he screwed up my bet on Texas to win the thing. Like, they got after Houston Street one night, and I was like, how is this happening? And I think they were down to, like, two strikes and two outs. I was like, it's over. I'm going to win. I was like, wait a minute. And you know what else it was? I'm having all these memories, and I believe they're actually on target. Like, sometimes you combine 2 or 3 years. I think that South Carolina, didn't they lose the first game against Texas? But it was the first year that that didn't end the tournament? South Carolina had a loss, got into the finals against Texas, lost the first game, and then came back and won two straight. I'm pretty sure that's – I was like – that's not fair. I yelled that like into the universe. And it just kind of floated. Who were they? Dan? Who?
I believe it was UCLA with Trevor Bauer and Garrett Cole.
Could have been. It was that year. I was like, this should have ended it. And then it didn't. And it cost me my ticket. And so I did. Yeah. And then the universe looked at me and said, is there some new deal we didn't hear about? Suddenly life's fair. I was like, oh yeah, that's right. So that was 2002, 3, and 4. Takes South Carolina to Omaha. Now, in the moment, they actually made it to the championship series. They were the runner-up in 02. And I remember our good friend Heath Klein was out there. And he said, he kept texting me. He was like, I can't come home. He was like, I wasn't supposed to be here for 2 weeks. He says, I didn't bring the right amount of clothes. He says, I wasn't prepared for this. Well, South Carolina with Ray Tanner started going out to Omaha pretty regular, and they would stay for a while. And so it kind of turned into a funny story for me. And Heath's like, well, I know where all the barbecue is, and so I'm fine in Omaha. Then in 2010 and 2011, both years, South Carolina won the College World Series. They went to Omaha, and they won the thing in back-to-back years, which means at the end of the 2000, and then in 2012, they were the runner-up. So at the end of the 2011 College World Series, Ray Tanner had the distinction of delivering two-thirds of the all-time national championships to South Carolina. They had a women's track national championship. It was either indoor or outdoor. Is there a combined over? I don't know. They had a women's track national championship, I remember. And then two baseball national championships. That was it. A guy who had dedicated his entire professional life to baseball, his amateur pursuits to baseball. At that point, after 2012, having another stellar season and finishing as the runner-up, Ray Tanner, 54 years old. Do you know what Ray Tanner could have done? Sand, Bud Light, waves. He didn't have to do a dang thing the rest of his day except go to the mailbox. Like, he's Stephen King. Dan, what's Stephen King got to do the rest of his days? Go to the mailbox. That is it. Ray Tanner, you want to get to the point where all you do, I go to the mailbox. Ray Tanner was there. I think it's called drinking from the silver cup. Like, you want to get there. Ray Tanner did it. And then Ray Tanner raised his hand and said, hi, we need a new athletic director. I'll do that. And I was like, scratch, needle scratch. I was like, Ray, I don't know you. Don't do that. All you are doing now is risking what you've already built. And when you have delivered in the way that literally nobody ever in the history of that school had ever delivered. When you've done that, I mean, am I wrong about this? All you can do at that point is screw up what the people there think about you. Now, here's the important disclaimer to say. For Ray Tanner, he was taking, a way bigger risk to his legacy than he had any reason to. He might not care about his legacy. Like, see, that's the part that doesn't get included with that. I was like, why in the world would you do that? It was like, like Nick Saban. I'm retiring as head coach at Alabama. And everybody's like, oh, my gosh, why are you retiring from coaching? He's like, no. Head football coach. Oh, yeah, I'm going to go coach the gymnastics team now. Oh, no, Nick, don't do that. Why? Well, because you don't know what you're doing. Like, all you could do is, I'm going to go coach the golf team. They may know that. I'm going to go coach track and field. I'm like, why would you do that? It's not exactly the same thing. Ray Tanner, I don't know. He knew about athletics and budgets and how the big picture worked and the SEC and TV and all that. He'd never been an AD before. I thought all he could do is mess that up. Did we see the... And we know what rules the roost. Now, South Carolina, they've got a great women's team. Have they won like 40 straight games? So they got a great women's team. And maybe it's a great women's program. So that's that. That's not how you stay employed. I got news for you. The Auburn AD, Alan Green, he found out in a lot of places basketball, men's basketball doesn't save you. How you are evaluated in almost every setting. There are exceptions. I don't know, UConn. How you are evaluated in almost every setting is, as athletic director, how are the overall general fortunes, the finances? What does the balance sheet look like, the accounting ledger? I mean, you've got to have that in line. But in addition to that, on the field, how are the results in football and on the court, men's basketball? There you go. And the big picture that we tie that back to you is who did the hiring? Because if you've been there 3 years and it's three losing years and it's time to fire the basketball coach that the old guy had hired, that's not on you. Ray Tanner, he was going to be evaluated not by women's basketball or indoor track or swimming and diving or equestrian. He was going to be evaluated in the SEC, same way I think almost every Vanderbilt, almost every AD is evaluated. How are we in football? Men's basketball. Ray Tanner got a 2-year contract extension this past Friday. Ties him to the school through June of 2020. June 30th is when a lot of most of the universities, that's the end of their year. And he will be athletic director if he chooses to stay through the end of June 2026. He is now 64 years old. He will receive a raise of $153,000. His total compensation for the new deal for the final three, $1.175 million. I don't know this, but I know in a lot of places. Do you know what your state retirement can be based in part on? Like your final 3 years as a state employee? So you kind of want to bump that up in some cases. I don't know that in South Carolina. Consult your tax professional. But there are a lot of places where your final – what are your final 3 years? Oh, okay, well, that determines what your pension is. Now, it all has not been porch swings and apple pie for Ray Tanner. But they're really good in football and really a lot better in football than – even folks like me with my hand raised who are fans of Shane Beamer, better than I thought. Steve Spurrier was the head coach when he got there, and then Steve Spurrier, it was a fall off, and he hired Will Muschamp, and that didn't work. Shane Beamer, so far that's worked. Dawn Staley. Do you know how much Dawn Staley makes? I'm going to say, Dan, he doesn't have to answer this. He doesn't know. He doesn't. In fact, I would put a gun. Dan, tell me within $100,000 how much. Dawn Staley makes $3 million a year. I didn't know you could do that. I didn't know there was the money in women's basketball for somebody to get paid $3 million a year. It's actually more than that. So, like Gino Auriemma, I don't know what he made. I didn't think it was $3 million. Dawn Staley, she produces. So that's about as good as it can be. Women's hoops doesn't keep you employed. Football, men's basketball. And it has not been perfect, but at South Carolina, it shows you when they look at that, they go, yeah, we're kind of pleased with this, and it's three more years, and so that they can now kind of put a cap on this. There is a lot of runway, a lot of lead time to transition. So in a lot of different ways, it hadn't been perfect. It's been better than I thought. And it gives you a lot of lead time to kind of transition. We break. We'll come back on this Monday next.
Catch the king of college football no matter where you go with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
I don't know how, and I'll quote the man. Making $1 million a year living on a boat in Boca as a single man? I don't know how that is the moment where maturity comes into your life. Somehow for Lane Kiffin, between getting fired by Nick Saban and showing up in Oxford, Mississippi, at some point, like, he aged 25 years. You know, there was always the driver's license, and he'll even tell you that. I think Lane, the reason I bring that up, I think Lane Kiffin is the most sober and realistic head coach that we care about and who comments about it and speaks his mind about name, image, likeness that exists. And he says, folks, right now, any success we have, we are juggling chainsaws. So, and that's not a conversation that a lot are going to entertain because Jimbo Fisher's like, what do you mean? We got nothing but money. But it's a big challenge. But I've never been more impressed with Lane on a lot of, and by the way, he bypassed what's supposed to be the easy route. It's supposed to be easier to win titles and stuff at Auburn than Ole Miss. He was like, I'm good. Want to welcome on right now, good friend of mine, good friend of the program. He provides really good insight every single day all across the Magnolia State. And then when you see him on ESPN and SEC Network, you realize, oh, he's a baller too. It is Richard Cross. Richard, how you doing, brother?
I don't know if I'm a baller. Happy first day of spring, even though it is cold. But good to be with you, as always. Fun times. Ole Miss just finished up spring break, and so they are about to get back to spring practice. Had a couple of practices before the break, and they'll hit it pretty hard for the next few weeks, culminating with the Grove Bowl on April the 15th. And, Chuck, you're going to need a program or a roster when you get there. 20 mid-year enrollees, 13 Division I transfers, which was the number 3 ranked transfer class, and so there's going to be a lot of getting to know you when the Rebels take the field for their spring game in mid-April.
You know, I talked about, like, Brian Kelly's doing that same thing at LSU. He had maybe 3 practices. I think Dan Lanning had 2, and then they break, and so they're all bouncing around spring break, and then they come back and get after it. Give me just a comment about the head coach, though, because, I mean, spring, there will be some stories and some outcomes. We'll get to them. I never thought I would look at Lane Kiffin as the, folks, pay attention to him. This is the voice of reason, especially with something as foundationally as shaking as name, image, likeness is.
Well, he's just been real about it since the very beginning. I mean, he was the guy that, you know, was talking about free agency and comparing it to the NFL. Now there's one area where, and I think he's changed on this a little bit, maybe a little bit of pushback, when he just said, you know, free agency, it's just like professional sports. Well, it's like professional sports, except for the fact that there are no rules, right? I mean, in the NFL, you've got a salary cap, and you've got roster limits, and you've got contracts that are in place, and you're going through the draft process. You don't have any of that. And, you know, I hesitate to use the word guardrails, because that feels like a dirty word when we're talking about NIL, because people say guardrails, you're trying to limit what student athletes can get. I don't think that's maybe the right way to describe it, but there are rules in the NFL and in other professional sports when you talk about free agency and guys moving around and being able to go and get what they can get. And there's some protection for teams, for franchises. There's no protection right now for schools. And frankly, I mean, if we're being really honest, there's no protection for the student athletes either. But it does feel like the deck is stacked in their favor. And Lane Kiffin has talked pretty openly about that, all the while trying to take advantage of the rules that are in place and build a roster in a way that Ole Miss has not been able to build a roster in years gone by.
Yeah, I've said the same thing. I said the difference in free agency is you don't have a receiver sign with Arizona and then after 3 weeks say, I'm going to play for Denver now. It's like, you can do that in college football. All right, I do want to talk on field, because there was a little kid about as big as a hood ornament, and I was so excited to see him last year, and it was going to be part of at least a two-headed monster and maybe even 3. And then Ulysses Bentley got hurt, and then Judkins started scoring touchdowns like he was collecting stray animals. So Ulysses Bentley, what can he be? Because he's got an exciting, fun game.
He does, right? And had good numbers when he was at SMU. I think Ole Miss needs him to be healthy. They need to see what they've really got with him, because they never got that right. I mean, he had a couple of runs. I think he had a touchdown, or maybe even a couple of touchdowns in the very first game of the season. But after that, you really didn't see a whole lot. He had the injury, and then when he tried to come back, he never was quite the same. And part of that was because the number of opportunities were limited. I mean, you're talking about, and I know you're talking about Bentley, but when you look at Judkins' numbers, He had 274 rush attempts in 13 games, went for over 1,500 yards and 16 touchdowns. He was absolutely special. But then also lost in that is what you got from number six last year as well in the backfield. So good, going to be on an NFL roster. Yep. And, you know, you think about there's only a certain number of carries to go around. And when you've got a player that is as talented as Zach Evans was a year ago, that's where the extra carries are going to be. So I do think going into this spring, they're looking for more than just Quinshon Judkins. They're trying to kind of figure out where to go moving forward in terms of the backfield. But there's no question that the guy that's carrying the load is number four.
All right, last thing, and this is just maybe just a conversation on the show over the last week or so for you. We got a minute. Chris Beard, he is hired. Is there moral outrage? How can we do this? Or do folks realize the adult world's a messy place?
Yeah, I think that's certainly what Ole Miss fans are by and large flocking to. There are some that are a little outraged, or at least a little, you know, kind of this doesn't feel great. But I think most have kind of rallied around the fact that this guy is an exceptional basketball coach. He's been really good everywhere he's been. If you believe some of the reporting out of Austin, Chris Del Conte would have liked to have had longer to try and let that play out, but maybe the political climate in Austin did not allow for that to happen. And as a result, Ole Miss has gotten arguably a top five basketball coach as an offshoot of that.
Yeah, you know, I've said there are a couple of things right now, racial inequity and, you know, domestic violence. They're third rail stuff for your careers. They can be. And so even though charges are dropped, he got gone. So I was just wondering how it went over. And I'm sure, I mean, I've lived in the South my whole life and my school just hired Hugh Freeze. So it kind of is what it is. Richard, I appreciate your time, friend. Thank you so much.
Thanks, buddy.
Richard Cross, get him on Twitter at Richard Cross STM. Good dude, and knows what it is when it comes to Ole Miss athletics. And so they hired Chris Beard, who was at Texas. If you don't know, Chuck, what happened? Accusation about his wife or fiance, and he hit me, and then she dropped the charges, but they fired him anyway.
Spring is here, and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season. More college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
9 states, 58 sticks. We added two at some point. Nobody told me. 58 sticks. Chuck Oliver Show. We talk college football, so thank you for that. You know, I tell y'all sometimes, you know, go to southernsportstoday.com. You can get the app here. You can do this. You can listen online to all kinds of stuff. I rarely tell you to follow me on Twitter because I really don't want you to follow me on Twitter because I don't want to be on Twitter. This was Twitter last week. Florida fans, we talked about, I mentioned this, and I said, hey, Dan, I think Florida fans, by my indications, Florida fans got their feelings a little bit hurt that they're going to have to open on a Thursday against Utah. And Dan Direct, now it's message board stuff. It's Twitter. But one Big Daddy Gator 86, lowest point in program history with Billy Napier. We're going to get taken for a ride. He's in way over his head. Credit to you, sir. You are Twitter. And it still is not a very convenient thing, but that's probably a little much to say lowest point in program history, among other things. And there are some positives. I know that. Want to bring on now from the Tampa Bay Times. We're going to talk Noles and we're going to talk Gators with Matt Baker. How you doing today, brother?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on.
Do you really enjoy Twitter? Like, that's kind of a necessary evil in our job, isn't it? We have to be on it, right?
Yeah. No, I do not enjoy it. Yes, it is a necessary evil. You know, I was on vacation last week. It was weird because Florida State, USF, and most importantly, my wife and kids' school district, they were all on spring break. So I was on spring break, too, and I did not have to pay attention to Twitter. And, buddy, let me tell you, it was glorious to – I didn't completely unplug, but at least some way get off of that hellscape of a website. It was a little refreshing.
Well, the Pac-12 Network and whatever the evil that is has decided that the Gators' travel schedule will include a Thursday night debut, first Thursday night game in like 30 years. They're going to be at Salt Lake City. And again, they're a little put out by that. Is there anything, I'm just asking you, not trying to lead you objectively, whatever, is there any commentary to, well, that's the space that the Gators occupy now. We can tell them when they're playing. We don't necessarily have to ask them if they're okay with it.
I mean, that's just the nature of the beast, right? Like, Florida was pretty unhappy when Florida State and the ACC made the Florida State game on Black Friday this past year.
Yeah.
And they were pretty clear in some of the things that they said, if you read between the lines, that this was not something that they were asked about or okay with. But look, that's just the way it is, right? There's plenty of weeknight games. That's something that just about every school in the country can play, and it's based on the home conference of that team. So I understand a little bit of being upset, but it's not that, oh, my God, the Gators are terrible. That's why they're playing on a Thursday. No, TV wanted it on a Thursday, so it is. It's pretty simple. And, of course, the way to fix that is keep winning. Right? Because if you keep winning and you win at a high level, then instead of that being a Thursday game, then suddenly that's the marquee Saturday night game that everybody in the country is talking about, the way it was with Bama, Florida State a couple, in 17 and that type of thing. But no, to me, it's not a big deal. Just suck it up and deal with it, guys.
Last year, there was a transfer from G5 that I think may have been the best O-lineman in the SEC, and now he's gone. So there's a lot of talk about, nuts and bolts and receivers and why don't they give it to ETN more. There's a lot to talk about. None of that matters. How is Graham Mertz going to play? And I'm serious. None of that other stuff.
Right.
I got a buddy of mine who's a Florida fan. Over the weekend, I saw him. He's like, I want to talk about it. It's like, none of that matters. None of it.
No, I think you're correct. If Graham Mertz is not significantly more, I guess, consistent than Anthony Richardson, then you're right. Florida's going to be in trouble again, because I do think the offensive line will be fine. ETN's really good. I'm still not particularly impressed with the receivers. But you can make a case here where if Florida's strength is the run game and everything, if Mertz is able to be efficient, right? He doesn't have to go out and be Tim Tebow or anything like that. But if he's efficient and does better than, say, 9 of 27 passing against Florida State and some of the just duds that Anthony Richardson played and some of the head-scratching throws, if he can eliminate those and be solid and be efficient, then Florida's got a chance to be pretty decent. But if not, if the floor is still not much higher, then you start looking at that schedule and you start thinking, man, that's another 6-6 team.
I want to talk about the defense, because it's not just, probably the way you script it to hire the DC 5 days before spring practice, but you do what you do. Again, we live in the adult world. It started about 4 or 5 years ago. Whatever year, I looked at the Florida run defense, and it literally was the worst it had been since 1971. And then the next year, I was like, and now they're short on corners. And then last year, I was like, they're just flat out bad. There's no context left. Mm-hmm. It's not, hey, if they can, like, they were just that. There were guys running around in Florida uniforms. I've never seen a Florida defense that poor tackling, specifically, if you want to know. How does that get better, especially with a new sheriff in town so soon to spring practice?
Well, I guess the easy answer is I'm not sure that it does. I think it will have to get better. I mean, you look at last year's defense was by far the worst that I can find on third down that the Gators have ever fielded. I think that only goes back to like 1980, because you can't go back further than that. So I do think there's going to be some sort of progress to the mean, because I do think they hit rock bottom last year. Maybe it's kind of getting rid of some of the guys who didn't necessarily fit, some of the holdovers. These are Billy's guys. You look at the linebackers they brought in from Michigan and Ohio State. Maybe those transfers are able to kind of step up and play at a high level here pretty quickly. I have questions, though. I have concerns, because they replaced one, was it? Patrick Toney was 31, I think, when he got the job, something like that.
Yep.
So you replace one really young guy who is a Napier, Kirby, Saban in that tree with a guy who's even younger, who's 29, and Austin Armstrong. And maybe it will work. Maybe he is a savant and absolutely brilliant and is able to diagnose this. But I also wonder whether he could be, again, the guy hasn't coached a game. These are the concerns that I would have. I wonder if he's going to be over his head, if he's going to be able to handle it. And then, frankly, I also question just the whole approach that Billy is using to build this, where almost all of the hires were guys that he knew from the past, worked with at Bama or in that tree. And I wonder if you look at last year and how bad it was, because, it was an unsuccessful season. Even by the low expectations that I set, they were worse than that. So I wonder if continuing to stay in that tree rather than going out and trying something different was the right approach for the way they filled the defensive coordinator and tight ends coach job.
Corey Raymond. It was one season, and there's a lot of dysfunction flying around everywhere, and now he has even more responsibility and a little more money because you got to shuffle things. This was viewed in Baton Rouge as this is a big deal that we lost him. Was it a big deal in Gainesville that they got him, or was it's just been 12 months, Chuck, we don't know yet?
Yeah, it was certainly a big deal that they got him. You look at what he did at LSU. I hate the whole weird DBU thing that Florida and Florida State and LSU and some others do. I think that's silly and overblown. However, LSU's DBs, when he was there, were as good as any in the country. I think that's fair to say when you look at some of the guys that he coached and recruited and developed. So getting him was absolutely a huge deal. So I don't look at obviously last year was defensively was bad. We discussed that. Some of that falls on the staff. I don't know how much of it falls on Raymond necessarily, just because those weren't people that he recruited and what have you. So I'm willing to give him a pass on that just because of the fact that he has proven at the SEC level to be an elite coach at that position.
Last thing, and it's just an opinion of yours. This is a guy, it looks right, and there were some plays where it looked right, some actual during the game. Hey, it looks right there too, not just walking out of the tunnel. Can Brendan Cox kind of get himself, tuck his shirt in and stand up straight enough that he can kind of make a living in the NFL for a while? Because he has talent.
No question he has talent. He was a five-star guy, and you can say what you want about recruiting rankings, but by and large, the five-star guys are really talented. And from there, it's up to them to live up to it. And there's plenty of guys who didn't work in college for whatever reason and had that talent, and they're able to click at the next level in a way that we didn't see at the college level. Can he do it? Yeah, absolutely. He certainly flashed enough. And again, there's a reason Kirby wanted him. There's a reason that Mullen wanted him. And he has that potential. But it's a matter of, kind of like what you said, it's a matter of keeping your head on straight. And because, look, there's a reason there's a reason he wasn't at Georgia anymore. And there's a reason he got kicked out of the Florida team during the season. So he's going to have to figure out what he needs to do from a maturity standpoint to stop making some of these mistakes where he can stick on a roster long enough, because the talent is there. It's up to him to kind of live up to it.
Yeah, and I'm kind of hoping, like the other end of this, I'm hoping Amari Burney can get some game checks, and he didn't even get invited to the combine. So, but I'm kind of hoping that that's in his future. Matt, just one quick question over in Tallahassee, replacing Jamie Robinson. That's not nothing. He became a lot better ball player than I was expecting. At least a lot more impactful, but that's kind of the only guy that they're missing back there. And what do you think about sort of the continuity that Mike Norvell's been able to build somehow in the age of the portal? Because Jared Verse is back and everybody but Robinson in the secondary is back. It's not just one and dones.
No, it's remarkable. You look at just the depth that he's built. I look at the offensive line and the defensive line, which those are the things that separate the Georgias and Bamas from everybody else. It's the O-line and the D-line to a large degree. And their O-line and D-line, I think, are going to be pretty strong. And there's a lot of homegrown guys in there, but there's also some good transfers in there. You look at Fabian Lovett and being able to keep him, Jared Verse at defensive end and what have you. I think Florida State's done a really good job with NIL in terms of, I think, using it more. You know, the recruiting rankings aren't great, but you look at the transfer rankings, and they're one of the top couple classes in the country. And then being able to retain those guys and Verse and love it and what have you. Obviously, Jordan Travis, Trey Benson, Johnny Wilson. I look at that team, and I'll put it this way, Chuck. After the Oklahoma bowl game, I walked out of that stadium thinking, man, this team that's coming back, if these guys, if all of them stay, that's a top 10 team. And I quickly realized I'm underselling them. I think they're a potential top five team. I think they're the favorite in the ACC. And I will go out and say what I've written. I think that there's a pretty good chance that we're talking about them as a playoff team heading into the last couple of weeks of the season this year. There's a difference between being a playoff team and being able to win it. I don't know that FSU was there, but I definitely think this is a team that could crash the playoff, no question.
Yeah, their quarterback makes plays. And, you know, you can undo that with turnovers, but raw numbers to me, I've always been as the guy a playmaker, and their guy is. All right, last thing for you, okay? At what point will we be able to have you on, and there's a reason for me to ask you about South Florida Bulls?
Oh, boy. Other than the stadium that they're trying to build, give it a couple years. It's going to take a couple years. I think Alex Golish, he's an impressive guy. He's an engaging guy, the former OC at Tennessee. And I think he's doing okay in recruiting, but it's just so hard for your first class. So I honestly think this is kind of a year zero for him, where next year we can talk about what are realistic expectations. And you know, USF's in a situation where with everything going on with conference realignment, they have to win, and they have to win big here pretty soon. Otherwise, they're going to potentially get left behind. So these next couple years are going to be absolutely pivotal with USF in terms of showing something on field in football, probably showing something on field in basketball. That'd be great. And then if they can get this stadium thing off the ground the way they're trying to have something they can open in 2026, the Bulls can make the steps necessary to be a Power 5 program, which they have that potential. It's just a matter of, can this guy coach? Can Alex Golish be the coach to finally lead them to a conference championship? And then we can talk about them being in the mix with that San Diego State, SMU kind of thing.
Yep, I've always said you can fill your scholarships with a city bus pass there. And there is just no reason to not win at the level. And I understand all the context to it. And plus, when they get the new crib, that's going to be sweet too. Matt, thank you so much for your time, man. Thank you.
You got it. Thanks.
Matt Baker, Tampa Bay Times. Yeah, they got a new stadium, and they have more interest and money and a new coach, Alex Golish. And it is – I'll expand it. No, City of Tampa, Hillsborough County. I want to go down to Dunedin, too. Can I do that? Clearwater? Give me, like, the five-county metro area, and I can put together a championship team if I can just get, like, the three stars. Just the three stars. And it just hadn't happened. I saw a headline, Alex Golish named sixth head coach of USF football. Crazy Jim Leavitt. Willie. Jeff Scott. Sounds. I bet I can name five of them. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll come back, wrap up on this Monday next.
Back to Southern Sports Today and the Chuck Oliver Show.
He's extremely coachable. He's a guy, from the moment that he stepped foot on campus, that's bowl preparation to coming back here end of January when we started the winter semester. Been phenomenal. He's got great urgency. He cares a great deal about learning his craft, learning our offense, but learning his craft at the quarterback position.
Josh Heupel. He's at a press conference talking about Nico Iamalaeva. That's not right. Dan has tried to talk me through it. And we had on, who did we have on? And he said, I think it was Adam Sparks. He says, I can say it, and then I rolls off my, and if it rolls off Adam's tongue, Adam's about a Southern, Adam makes me sound like I'm from London. Adam, he says it rolls off his tongue. He says, but you can call him Nico. He's okay with it. I was like, all right, well, if the kid has granted permission, he's good with it. Nico, great first impression. And the consistent feedback that I have gotten from folks who either scouted him in person, eyeballs on him, scouted him in person or coached against him or worked with him or have coached him in camps and skill, you know, situations, not games, and now in Knoxville. Very mature, very beyond 17. No, he's 18. I don't think he's 18 yet. He's a high school senior. He's supposed to be getting ready to go to prom. Like, he's supposed to be waiting for Sheila at the 300 hall, and he sees her coming, and he gets nervous and runs away. All right, that's what he's supposed to be doing. Instead, he's getting ready to play a spring football game when a stadium seats 100,000 people. Do you know what, like, he and, like, maybe even David. David's 29? Okay. Do you know what they never got to experience? Dan may have missed out on this. When you're in, like, eighth grade and the dance is coming up, and you cannot text or send an email. You had to pick up the phone. And when you get down to where there was one number left to push, and you can hang up the phone. You got nervous, you dialed in the first, and then you're like, nope, one, hung up. There was no sending a text. Which is why maybe you didn't go to a lot of dances. You don't have to do that now. But Nico, who is about to turn 18, I believe. He's 17, and he's supposed to be getting ready to ask Sheila to go to prom, which he may still ask Sheila to go to prom. You know the difference? Is he will fly back to California in the PJ, and he's going to have a baller prom because he told Sheila, I don't know who he dates, but it's a little different than before name, image, likeness or before early enroll or whatever. Yeah, he's making it back to prom. But he's not nervous about it. He's got everything squared away. The word about Nico is he is mature beyond his years. The advanced billing, and now it's sort of unfolding that way. Dan, how's your Monday unfolding?
I preferred to get rejected in person. That was my method there.
Yeah.
You know, seventh,
eighth
grade.
Happened on the 300 hall, too.
Yeah. You know, no, I was going to go with Troy.
Only because there was no name, image, likeness when you were in high school.
Right.
Otherwise.
Yeah. No, that's it. That's it. I mean, I was really before my time there in that regard. So, you know, maybe now if I could go back. But there's no need. I like where I'm at right now. This is according to UTSports.com, the official Tennessee website. I'm going to try my best. Ia Maleava.
I'll try to get there. I really will.
I think eventually we will. I mean, it took us a minute with Tua. Me with JT Tuimoloau took me a minute too, so soon enough. A couple of things from this weekend in March Madness that I think it kind of, more than anything, I was like, yep, I get it. And we've talked about it for the longest time, especially when it comes to the college football playoff. It's a TV show when it's all said and done. While people might think that the NCAA tournament is a, you know, fail-safe, it is the fairest, you know, tournament that we can have, it's still a TV show. Do you think that it is at all a coincidence that the committee, when they were putting this thing together, looked at potential matchups and just said, oh, Texas could play against Texas A&M if they both advance to the second round? Boy, that's a happy coincidence. How about that? Oh, Houston and Texas could play against each other if they advance all the way to the Elite Eight? Oh, that's fun. Yeah, we really like that. You're trying to get the most exposure and the most eyeballs to your product as possible. And guess what, folks? It happens in the NCAA tournament, and the same thing happens in college football as well. You might say that you like the Cincinnati's of the world, or you like the, you know, TCU's or whoever, to be able to advance and be able to have a chance to play for their national title. But the TV numbers show you that you don't. That we do like having where it's Michigan State, it's Duke, it's Kansas, it's Kentucky. It is all these different types of schools in basketball, same deal in football as well. While people might complain and say, ah, Alabama and Georgia again, then it's also a, oh, hey, second quarter of that game, let me check and see what's happening with that game. There is interest with the big names, and the big names do draw. And while people might say, oh, it's too top-heavy in college football, guess what? The college basketball game as well, if they had their druthers, it would be all blue bloods for the 16 teams left to go.
I had a glorious time watching college basketball the past 4 days. And I'll say that probably it's 85%, 80% maybe of the college basketball I've watched this entire season. But it was a fantastic weekend. And again, UConn, you watch Sanogo much this year? Here's his game. He gets the ball literally anywhere on his half of the court. One dribble, two steps, he's at the cup. It's amazing. And St. Mary's had no answer last night, and so that's how that went. But watching Tennessee play, Houston taking care of their business, Kansas and Purdue not. Fantastic opening 4 days. Thanks for everybody coming here today. 22 hours from now, we will be back. Dan, thank you. David, thank you. Everybody, y'all listening right now, thank y'all as well. More Chuck Oliver Show tomorrow.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Braves season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season.